liken it to, if you think of social media, I'm not on social media other than LinkedIn. I haven't been for years, but LinkedIn still has its challenges as well, where you see, wow, everyone's doing something with AI. Like, what am I doing wrong? And you start to see this perfection of what that looks like, similar to what people get into with Instagram and some of these other things. And then you start to think bad about yourself. Like, am I doing something wrong? I mean, I'm struggling with hundreds of backlogs of requests already. My team can barely meet the needs of what we need on a daily basis, and we're struggling. And now we're not doing AI. And so those are the conversations I've heard from so many people, where, don't get me wrong, there are very many AI use cases, and we can talk about some of those. But so much of what ends up happening is, here's where the disconnect happens, in that, hey, I'm a leader of an analytics team. Executives are like, hey, what are you guys doing with AI, and why aren't we doing more? Your team, right. The junior team is like, hey, we have this backlog of requests. We need more help to be able to do it. We can't work on these strategic projects that we've already defined for the year. And then the leader's trying to say, okay, well, I need to do all these projects. I now need to do these AI projects. I need to work on these dashboards. I have all these ad hoc data requests. Oh, and, you know, two people are out on vacation, or they're sick, or something like that. And so they're just overwhelmed by this. And what ends up happening is, a year goes by, and they accomplish very little. And that's no fault of their own, other than this just barrage of information that's coming towards them. And so many things, what I talk about with these, you know, sessions with people is that, well, first of all, it's understanding where they're coming from. Because in therapy, well, first of all, you have to be a believer in therapy to have these conversations. If you're not, it's never going to work for you. But the idea is, now you're able to share information with somebody who gets it. They understand the challenges.
Welcome to The Data Tea, our monthly podcast on the news, trends, and technology transforming data today. We're your hosts, Armand Petrosian and Satish Jayanthi, the co-founders of Coalesce. Let's get started.
Okay, here we go. We've got an awesome guest today. It is Nico Mann, or I should say Nicholas Mann, but goes by Nico, founder of Stratos Consulting. I'm really excited to have you on, Nico. I am Armand Petrosian, CEO and co-founder of Coalesce. I've got my co-founder here, Satish, if you want to introduce yourself real quick. And then we'll start the show with Nico pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm Satish Jayanthi, CTO, co-founder. I'm excited to have this discussion with Nico today.
Cool. Yeah, appreciate being on with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I would love to get a quick background from you, Nico. Just, you know, give us the story around Stratos, how the company was founded, what you guys do, what you focus on, and share for the audience. Would be super helpful to hear.
Definitely. A lot of good things to focus on there. So Nico Mann, founder, CEO of Stratos Consulting. So Stratos has been around for 7 years, but I've really spent the last 15 years in the data and analytics space. Initially getting out of college, I was at a consulting company. Learned a ton, met some amazing people, some great friendships. I think what I found, though, is I really burned out as part of that. So you think about, in consulting, some of these firms working 80-hour weeks, high-stress projects, tight deadlines. And for me, that was one of those things where I said to say, hey, I need to take a step back and see, is this the direction I want to go with my career? And is this what I value? So having that assessment, it was one of those things where timing is everything. So a former client, he actually got in touch with me. He was at a company, Carex Biopharmaceuticals, and he said, hey, Nico, we're hiring for this enterprise architect role. Think you'd be a great fit. You have the opportunity to form it however you want. So I had some really good conversations with the team, ended up taking that job. And it was a huge eye-opener to see what goes on behind the scenes at a company when you're not a consultant. So think about, all right, well, I see all of the day-to-day challenges related to data, to infrastructure, to timing, to budget, so many of those pieces. And then I also got really deep into the commercial side of data at pharmaceutical, at biotechnology companies, because I had done some of that in consulting, but seeing it as enterprise architect took it to a next level. So you think about seeing data sets like syndicated data, specialty pharmacy, CRM data, patient services, and how you bring all this data together to then prepare and position it for leadership, for the field, and that way they can get the most value out of it. And one of those things for me that was great, met a lot of great people. I wouldn't be here today without the people I met, but I found that some of the environment was a little too slow for me, in that people talk about, yeah, I want to work on all these projects and it's really exciting. But then people would spend half the day saying, oh, I'm too busy, but then they're on Facebook and social media half the day. And I just did not thrive in that environment. And so I wanted to get back to how do I bring more value to people who are consuming data and who are struggling with some of those day-to-day tasks, because then they end up staying late, having to get there early, and they're really frustrated. So I wanted to bring more value to people. And so that's when somebody who was head of finance, he left and went to another pharmaceutical company, and he said, "Hey, Nico, can you recommend a system for me?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, happy to do that as a friend." And then half jokingly, he's like, "Well, can you implement it for me too?" So I was like, "Yeah, probably do that." And so that was a perfect opportunity for then, you know, signing them as a client. I then kept Carex, my previous employer, as a client as well, because I still wanted to support them. And then from there, certainly taking off and working within my network and moving into other pharmaceutical companies to help them with their various data needs. And I think the biggest thing for Stratos that I've wanted to focus on in the philosophy is how do we grow organically and build long-term partnerships with our clients, as opposed to, oh, well, we have all these investors that we report to and we need to grow, we need to double every year, we need to drive more projects, build our portfolio. And I've just seen so much pain that comes with that, where now we've been around for 7 years. We have some of our clients, for a few of them for 6 years, one of them for 7 years. And now we continue growing organically to add more clients when we feel like we're ready and can support that. And our team is able to work a reasonable amount of time, they're not burning themselves out, and they're getting to work the latest and greatest technology. And so that's something we've really focused on. And then from more of a industry perspective, staying within that landscape of pharmaceutical, of biotech. So think about, hey, how do we build a commercial data warehouse when a company is preparing to launch? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm listening. I'm nodding my head. Yeah, keep going.
And so how they're preparing to launch and then positioning it and saying, all right, we need to bring all our data together. We understand how the competitive products are performing. We can now inform our sales strategy. And so certainly one aspect, and then the other being, hey, working more on the finance FP&A side, building data warehouses, building analytics to be able to support those needs, especially as you go more upmarket with some of these larger companies and they have so much data. So how do you bring it all together and prepare it in an automated way? And so that's really been some of the journey for us. And it's been an incredible journey so far. And we have an amazing team here, primarily based in, you know, Boston, New York City. So we're fully US-based team. And we just, yeah, great team to work with. I'm very, very fortunate.
That's amazing. What an intro. I know we've worked together on a handful of different accounts. And I've heard from the team. So this is for the audience here. It's the first time we're meeting. So it's obviously a pleasure to meet you, Nico. You've done really amazing work, and you mentioned that there is some advantages to being very focused into the biotech industry. Is there anything that comes to mind immediately, or is it mostly just like understanding the terminology, understanding the language, or do you feel like they have similar problems?
I think there are similar problems, but the success that really comes, or that we've seen, is having that subject matter expertise in these data sets. Because yes, you could bring in a team who's like, yeah, we're really good at data warehousing, data engineering, but it's going to take them so much time to get up to speed. And some of the nuances when you get into the data modeling and to really structure the data in a way that's going to be consumable for the analytics, you have to have an understanding of how these data sets relate together, because so many of these data sets come from different data providers. And when you're bringing data from different data providers, they're not thinking about each other. They're thinking about, how do I just send this to as many of my customers as possible? And it's going to be in their format. So much of it is, how do you manage those data providers to then position the data to be able to link it properly? The timing is aligned. You're then able to build it and support the analytics behind it. So that's why for us, it's been such a huge value where we have subject matter experts on our team. And something I'll add too as well. So my wife is also part of the company. She heads up our client experience practice. And so she is also a subject matter expert in the commercial analytics space. She's been at multiple pharmaceutical companies in the commercial side. So this is a family-run business. We both bring that lens of the commercial data side and technology aspects as well. So, I mean, for us, we will not succeed if our clients don't succeed, and we're putting all our efforts into this, and which is why we're so thankful for the clients that we have and the team that we have as well. But yeah, so much of that came from our backgrounds, having experience in life sciences, in pharmaceuticals, in biotech, and then being able to say, hey, here's how we do it more effectively. Because to your point, and something else I want to talk about as well too, so many of the providers out there in this space, they've been around for many, many years. So they're used to doing things the way they've done them for many, many years, and they're not necessarily evolving to use the latest technology to deliver faster. So think about technology-enabled services, and you know, we can touch on AI at some point, but the idea is, how do we use this technology to be more competitive in the market, to get data faster to the people who need it? especially in a product launch. You don't have time to wait around for, oh yeah, we can wait, you know, 4 months for a waterfall approach to deliver this project. No, they need those data sets as soon as they come online. And the only way to do that is to use technology to efficiently deliver that in a faster way, using more of an agile methodology as well. And so that's where we say, hey, we'll either work with the team's data infrastructure as they have it, or we'll fully outsource it for them to get them up and running faster. But that flexibility has allowed our clients to move much faster as opposed to relying on some more of the legacy tech and how things approach that too.
That's awesome. Side note, it's really cool to hear you and your wife run the business. Me and Satish always joke we're each other's work wives. So I can't imagine what it's like, but I'm glad you're making it work. Clearly it was the right recipe, right formula. So question from the audience, and also something related to the title of this podcast was, obviously the title was Data Therapy in the Age of Relentless Innovation in AI. I'm going to touch on that here in a second, but it looks like Shiv here is asking, hello, Nico, what are the most common gaps you have seen so far in pharma companies? And I think just biotech in general, that's something I'm curious about as well. If there's, now that you've worked with so many, are there frequent gaps that you see or frequent issues that are unique to the industry?
So I would say the biggest one tends to be where data is managed and the team that actually supports that. So if you think about big pharmaceutical companies, they're very likely going to have their own internal data teams, their analytics teams. So they have a big team to support those initiatives. But you start going down to some of the very early stage, even some of the mid-market, it's very rare to see a dedicated analytics team supporting that organization, which then sometimes that falls to IT, it falls to independent contractors. And what you end up finding, though, is that a lot of these companies aren't getting the scale of analytics that they actually need. And then you start going around the organization and asking questions. It's like you find people are still manually doing stuff in spreadsheets. They're downloading. I talked to someone who's a director of analytics, which is a director of commercial analytics, which is a very common title in that they're responsible for analyzing all the commercial data, providing recommendations to the ELT, to the board. And so One of the ones I was talking to, he's like, well, Nico, I spend 60% or more of my week downloading and waiting for data. I can't help but laugh. I mean, this is some years ago, but the idea is, this is a highly compensated person. You're talking, you know, salaries, 200,000, 300,000 that they're paying this person. Yeah. Essentially manipulate data that's a very repeatable and manual process otherwise. And so those are the opportunities where I saw a lot of these companies are, you know, in the $50 to $1 billion in revenue, and they're still struggling with some of those core foundational processes and doing things in Excel. So that's why I say there is so much opportunity when you can bring in the right team, and it doesn't have to be this full-blown $1 million consulting team to go do things. And that's how we approach this with a more of a fractional data team. You get a part-time architect, part-time engineer, whatever it is, to support those needs. And then you're able to deliver things much faster and at a much cheaper cost as well too. But it's identifying what are those gaps in the first place. But so much of it stems from, they just don't have dedicated resources, at least for what I've seen over the last 7 years or so.
Got it. Are you seeing that shift? Also, it looks like Lee's commenting here. He's seeing the same thing in large healthcare insurance companies. I'm not surprised by that either. But are you starting to see that shift? I guess you're probably at the tip of the spear in regards to seeing the industry shift. But are you seeing some momentum there on the evolution around how they're approaching analytics? Or does it still feel like we're in the very early innings?
It depends on the size. So some of the more, once you get above like $1 billion revenue companies, some of them have shifted to the mindset of using an analytics center of excellence. And how do you manage governance across all your data sets instead of like each team managing their own? And then there's kind of chaos across them when you want to share data. But that's when you're getting to really upmarket companies. What we've been seeing more now too, interestingly enough, and here's where some of the challenge stems from, is some of these companies, they'll hire an analytics lead. They might only have budget for like one or two people, but then those two people are still, they're not going to be the rock stars that everyone's like, oh yeah, I got the 99th percentile, whatever rock star of data engineer. It's somebody who's going to take a lot of time to do that work. And then what they find is they're not actually able to consistently hit the deadlines that they need. So we're actually seeing a shift back to using more consultancies or fractional data teams to support that, because it's more cost effective. You can ramp up and down as you need that support. And you start to build a lot more longer term knowledge around that instead of one person leaving and walking out the door. And it's interesting too, because in this industry, I feel like over the last 15 years, it was initially a lot using a lot of consultants and contractors. Then it went to full-time hires. Now we're going back to contractors again. And it's almost this shift going back and forth, which is pretty interesting to see too.
Yeah. Super common. Satish and I also always talk about how common the pendulum swings back and forth, but usually we'll end up somewhere in the middle in the long run. So sounds like you're witnessing that journey. You know, one other thing, and I'm sure this is everybody's favorite topic, is all around AI. And I'm thinking based on what you're hearing here, or based on what I'm hearing here, and the way companies are interacting with data, you know, given this is the data therapy session, can you talk a little bit more about how AI is potentially overwhelming people in these industries? You know, how is that involved in the conversations that you're interacting with biotech companies?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing there is overwhelm. And so I was thinking about this a little more today, and this idea of data therapy, where did this even come from? I've had the privilege of meeting with probably hundreds of people in the data community just in the last 2 years, be it people who are hands-on, people who are leading teams, people who are at the executive level. And so much of what they talk about is they're overwhelmed with the noise of AI that's out there. Okay. So I liken it to, if you think of social media, I'm not on social media other than LinkedIn. I haven't been for years, but LinkedIn still has its challenges as well, where you see, wow, everyone's doing something with AI. Like, what am I doing wrong? And you start to see this perfection of what that looks like, similar to what people get into with Instagram and some of these other things. And then you start to think bad about yourself. Like, am I doing something wrong? I mean, I'm struggling with hundreds of backlogs of requests already. My team can barely meet the needs of what we need on a daily basis, and we're struggling. And now we're not doing AI. And so those are the conversations I've heard from so many people, where, don't get me wrong, there are very many AI use cases, and we can talk about some of those. But so much of what ends up happening is, here's where the disconnect happens, and that, hey, I'm a leader of an analytics team. Executives are like, hey, what are you guys doing with AI, and why aren't we doing more? Your team, right. The junior team is like, hey, we have this backlog of requests. We need more help to be able to do it. We can't work on these strategic projects that we've already defined for the year. And then the leader's trying to say, okay, well, I need to do all these projects. I now need to do these AI projects. I need to work on these dashboards. I have all these ad hoc data requests. Oh, and you know, two people are out on vacation, or they're sick, or something like that. And so they're just overwhelmed by this. And what ends up happening is, a year goes by, and they accomplish very little. And that's no fault of their own, other than this just barrage of information that's coming towards them. And so many things, what I talk about with these, you know, sessions with people is that, well, first of all, it's understanding where they're coming from. Because in therapy, well, first of all, you have to be a believer in therapy to have these conversations. If you're not, it's never going to work for you. But the idea is, now you're able to share information with somebody who gets it. They understand the challenges. I mean, to this day, I can't even talk to my family about what I do, because they still think I do, you know, something with computers. So it's I can never have those conversations with them. But you find people in your community, in your data community, doesn't matter if you work together, you never met. I mean, I've had such good conversations with people who just get it. And we share those same challenges. And then you think about those situations that we say, OK, you know, are you looking for somebody to listen? Do you want a shared experience? I can share a similar experience and how I handle that. Or are you looking for direct feedback as well, too? And certainly it depends on the scenario. But so much value that I've heard from people is when they're able to actually shift their focus to just a few priorities for what they want to accomplish for the year, and not ignore all the rest, but say, hey, here's what we're going to focus on, because they're going to add the most ROI for us. It's going to save us time. It's going to make people's jobs easier, and building those business cases, and then they can start to focus on what they want to accomplish for this year. But so much of AI is overwhelming people right now, is the takeaway, what I've learned from people.
Yeah. That's,
I got a follow-up question on that. So, at the end of the day, AI is going to change things. We all know that, you know, right? So it is... It is imperative that you infuse AI into, you know, into your daily work and your like projects that you do. How do you identify the right use cases for in your experience with the biotech industry? What are some of the use cases where you felt like, okay, AI is applicable here, and it's very much so.
Definitely. And even before touching on that, I think one of the things that we focus on so much is, how do you make sure your data framework is structured to actually support some of these AI use cases? Because a lot of companies, they're in the mindset of, I want to do AI, but then they're still struggling with some of those core issues. And a lot of people talk about, yeah, AI can work on unstructured data, and that's great. And there's absolutely fundamental use cases for those. But when you're working with finance data, when you're working with commercial data, when this is driving business decisions, and especially finance, if you're thinking about a publicly traded company, SOX compliance, other elements there, you need that data to be right. So you need to have a good process in place to be able to support that. Now, let's say you have all that, right? And that framework is in place. You have good data quality. You've automated most of those manual tasks that people are dealing with. Then we start to focus on, well, where are people spending most of their time that they otherwise did not think could be automated because it just the technology didn't exist for it. So I want to talk about a few of those. So one, in the pharmaceutical industry, so you think about manufacturing. So a lot of pharmaceutical biotech companies, they don't have their in-house manufacturing. They'll outsource that to a third party. So you'll have a third party manufacturer, a 3PL, third party logistics. And so the other thing is you'll have quality checks as part of the movement of these or the manufacturing of these drugs. And so companies want to understand, well, what were those quality tests? How did they return? What were the results? And so much of that information for a lot of these companies is coming in PDF formats. So they're coming in hundreds of pages of documents, and then they have teams of people who are literally going through all these documents, reading them, finding the number, and then keying it into an Excel file to then load into your database. So this is a perfect use case that we've come across a few times using something in Snowflake called Document AI that you can now train the models on these PDFs. Now, of course, it takes work and there's some quality checks and everything goes into that, but that's a very real use case to save people thousands of hours a year to then repurpose their time for somewhere else in the business. So that's one use case. Mm-hmm. Another one that we're starting to see as well, too, is if think of more on the output side. So you think of Gen AI, and Satish and I were talking a little bit about this beforehand, but so much of it, if you think of like in finance and FP&A especially, they go through the rigor of, okay, well, I'm going to create all these PowerPoints. I'm going to create my commentary explaining variance on my flex reporting between actuals and budget, actuals and forecasts. That is a very laborious process in general, to say the least, especially when you're at a very large organization. So now with Gen AI and some of these other tools that help you automatically put your outputs into PowerPoint, or even if you want to work within the dashboards themselves, which some companies are, you can now automatically generate, at least to give you a starting point with Gen AI. Now, it's not always going to be perfect and you can eventually get it there, but imagine getting 80% of what you need as a starting point. You're like, okay, great, this explains the variances, you validate it, you maybe make some updates to the commentary, but imagine a team of 40 FP&A people, how much time that would save across each of those team members to be able to accomplish that. Then they can spend more time providing data to their department owners, leadership, and that way they're actually spending their time on the analysis of FP&A instead of just spending their time creating PowerPoints, which is a very big thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think one other thing I'm thinking about too. So same thing on the commercial side though as well. And this applies to anywhere where you're actually repeatedly creating content that could have some explanation associated with it. On the commercial analytics side, same idea. You're building an ELT deck. You're building a board deck. So much of that says, hey, here's what happened the last quarter. Here's why this happened, and giving some of that commentary. And I've seen teams spend so much time every single time they have to pull that together. There's a slightly different view. They have to tweak it. They're doing all this stuff in Excel and then PowerPoint. But having do some of the analysis for you and automatically generate that commentary, that will go a long way as well too. And then one of the other areas that we're working on as well too with some clients is, how do you enrich your data? So you think about, once you have data landed in your data platform, say in Snowflake, how do I now use something like Cortex to actually enrich this by adding additional description fields or other things you could go pull down that otherwise you had somebody manually do that task or review it? So these are some areas we focused on, but at the end of the day, you still have to get a lot of that data right in a good data model, in a good data warehouse, to be able to support some of these analytic needs that we're working on.
Yeah, that makes sense. Have you got something, Satish?
Yeah, just to follow up on the models that Nico is mentioning. So you mentioned a couple of times, you know, the models, the analytical models. Are you guys, do you guys build or implement kind of standard models for biotech industry? Are you familiar with those, or you guys do that as a consulting company?
So I hate the word standard and I hate the word off the shelf when it comes to these models now. And I say that because we're working with a new client exactly for this reason, because they said, hey, all the competitors said, oh yeah, we got claims for you and we have sales performance and this is how we build it. So you're going to get what we the consultant build for you. And yeah, maybe we can make some tweaks for you, but this is how we're doing it, as opposed to us. Yeah, we'll bring the experience of the past models that we've built. So think of the data models in the data warehouse, and that help that guide that conversation. But we exist to support our clients and their needs and how they want to do their reporting, not the other way around. So much of it is, yeah, we'll use a starting point because we've done this so many times, but now how do we tweak this to make sure that the data is aligned? And where I've seen the biggest disconnect is if you think about on the reporting side, if you think about ingestion or the stages of data, so we'll get a little deeper on the technical side. So think about, all right, well, I'm gonna land all my data. So I wanna have it at the most granular level in the staging area, or your call it your bronze layer, whatever you wanna call it there. So you have your granular data. Okay, great. Now we want to build our star schemas for our fact and dimensions. We're gonna do that in the data warehouse layer. Okay, now we can manage slowly changing dimensions. We manage the history, do data validation checks, everything in between there. And that's all good. And I think a lot of companies do that really well. Where the disconnect starts to come is, well, now that you've created these different warehouse models, now how do you just start to bring it into a semantic layer to join up that data for the true analyses that the, call it the commercial analytics lead or whoever is asking questions need that information for? And so I'll give you an example. And so when I was working in-house as an enterprise architect, this is where I saw the challenge, is that the consultants would give us the star schema and they'd be like, okay, great, here's claims data, or here's specialty pharmacy, here's your prescriptions data. And then there was the expectation that we were supposed to create the semantics in Tableau and start to link all of those fields together, which is certainly possible, but that's not Tableau's strength. That's just because you have no other choice to do it. And so much of that stemmed from they did not build a semantic layer in the data layer, which is exactly what they should have done. And now we've taken that approach so many times for our clients, where if we're in Snowflake, we'll control that semantic layer and say, hey, we want to bring in CRM data and we want to see the call activity that sales reps are doing. And they're calling on these doctors. And how does that link to the prescriptions that doctors are actually writing? And so you start to link some of these data sets together and you put the quality checks around that to make sure all the data is good. But managing that in a database, now as an end user, you start doing ad hoc analysis, start building dashboards. Your experience is so much better because you don't have to learn, oh, do I have to join all this stuff together? Why is this data duplicate? Like people, that's what drives lack of adoption. I mean, people, we haven't even talked about change management at all, but this is the whole thing is the reason people don't adopt these systems is because they're like, well, I can just easily do this in Excel and I don't know how to do this in Tableau now because this data model is garbage. They wouldn't use that word, but I'll use it. And so it creates frustration, especially when you invest so much money into that. And that's why for us, yeah, we'll go in and say, hey, here's a starting point. Here's what we've seen work really well with a few different clients. But we're not going to say, oh, you have to use these data models. We know everyone's journey is going to be different and how they approach analytics. And we're there to support that. And the other thing on the data model side, which is also frustrating, is that, okay, you build this and it's live day one. You have your data warehouse. You have the latest data sets, your specialty pharmacy, your syndicated payer access, all of these things. But of course, there's always the need for future data sets. What if I have a new specialty pharmacy? What if I now want to integrate my hub data into this? So what we've seen in the past, though, is people, okay, great. Well, that'll take us, 4 to 6 months to get that new data set. Well, that's just not acceptable. You've lost half a year because you can't model this data because it was built in such a way that it maybe worked 10 or 15 years ago, but the technology exists today to be able to expedite that modeling process. And so you think about if you build a model flexible enough that's using technology, and I'll say it, we are big believers of Coalesce because it expedites the creation of those pipelines so fast. We've used it on several of our clients and they're just amazed at how quick you can do things. And we use it ourselves. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm very hesitant to recommend a tool, but between that and Snowflake has created the power for us to be more competitive for our clients to enable them to be more competitive by getting data faster into their data models. And I'll give you one more example because I'm going on a tangent here, but I was talking to a buddy who's he's the head of commercial operations at another pharmaceutical company. And he's like, Nico, I was talking to my provider and I just said I needed a new dashboard on this other tab. You know, they have their dashboards already. Yeah. And they're like, it said it's going to take 7 to 9 weeks to get out there. And he's like, the data already exists in the data warehouse. Why does it take 7 to 9 weeks to create a dashboard? So he said to them, he said, hey, what if I throw more money at you guys and we can bring in more resources to do this faster? They said, well, no, we can't do that because it's on their proprietary dashboard portal platform. It's not like on Tableau or Power BI or Sigma. So now you can't even supplement your team to do that because it's locked into a tech. And so for us, that's so frustrating when you lose a quarter, almost a quarter, when you're trying to do some analysis for your sales force because the technology can't support it. To me, that's unacceptable. So that's where we take this mindset of, let's use flexibility in the technology. Hey, if it's Power BI, great. We can supplement your team with some Power BI people or Tableau or Sigma, or you can do it yourself, because we don't always say, oh, you have to fully outsource it to it. It could be your own data platform. But that's the mindset that some of these companies need to start getting into is, when you lock in with a particular vendor on their proprietary platform and it's not easy to bring in other resources, it creates so much of a challenge and bottleneck when you run into these situations as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's really interesting to hear. I mean, obviously for us at Coalesce, we built the platform like you for specifically people like yourself, trying to get things done very quickly, be able to make changes efficiently, do it in a transparent way and then also an extensible way. It looks like Lee's got a question around how you're using Coalesce to run AI tasks like Document AI. You mentioned Cortex earlier. It sounds like you're leveraging a lot of the cutting edge Snowflake functionality. What does that look like? Is it just using the UDNs from the marketplace, like the Coalesce nodes, or what does that journey typically look like for you and the team?
Yeah, that's a good question. I am less hands-on than I used to be. So if I had my architect's money, I would ask them specifically. But I will say, for some of the tasks, even just let's think about some of the resources within Coalesce. We've been able to even use Coalesce for something like ingestion from S3. So let's not think of Coalesce as an ingestion tool, but those are even some of the capabilities that have cut down. Oh, okay, we need a third-party ingestion tool to just get some files, or how we manage it that way. So the idea is, our team is focused on, let's keep everything within Coalesce as much as possible, use those additional nodes. And our team's pretty good at tinkering with the latest ones that come out to see, oh, how can we use this? And then that way you're maintaining that flow in that single view. And of course, for our team, it makes the troubleshooting so much easier. And one thing I want to add to that as well, too, is that so much of this is, hey, we're able to deploy some of these projects using a single data engineer, part-time architect, and a part-time data warehouse lead, where previously the same projects could take anywhere from 5 to 8 resources to do the same amount of work. But now that you have 5 to 8 resources, you have people coding in different ways. You have no change control or version control process. Everyone's kind of deploying whatever they want. When somebody's out, you have to go troubleshoot and untangle their code. Whereas in this is, hey, we slot one of our other data engineers onto this project. Okay, cool. They're also using Coalesce. Great. Now we can understand this because it's building the code for you. And now it's a matter of just understanding what the flow of the pipelines are as well, too. So many value. But yeah, I'd love to get some of those guys on to talk more about that.
I think one of them messaged me on LinkedIn. So I'd love to do a follow-up session with you. There's a lot of good content here. Maybe we could talk through one of the customer journeys. That's always a fun event. Lee's done one of those. He's been in the comments section here asking that question just now. But it's been amazing having you on, Nico. Really, really appreciative to have you jump on. We really love working with Stratos. It's a great consultancy. I think whether you're taking on like a full-on implementation or more of a managed service, an organization in the industry of biotech would be crazy not to talk to you guys. So thank you so much. And thank you everybody for tuning in. There were some great questions. So this was really engaging. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys very much. You get me on these tangents, I'll keep going. So I appreciate you bearing with me.
No, it's great. It makes our job easy. Me and Satish always love it. We could talk and we could listen for days. So
cool.